As we came, we saw, he died.
Welcome to the Lions of Liberty podcast. Here is your host, your guide, your shining beacon of liberty, Mark Clare.
Welcome back, my Liberty Lloyd Webbers, to Lions of Liberty, your home for great conversations about the ideas of liberty. And this is episode number 251, which means you can find today's show notes located over at lionsofliberty.com/251. And if you are a fan of this program, there are a couple other libertarian podcasts out there that I know you guys are going to love. You've got to check out Roger Paxton's Lava Flow podcast, the Johnny Rocket Launchpad, and of course, our friend Chris Spangle and the We Are Libertarians podcast. Check them all out. My guest today is making his second appearance on this program. He first appeared back in episode 189, so maybe go back and give that a listen if you missed it. He has been involved in the liberty movement for several decades, and along the way has written many books, including Progressivism, A Primer on the Idea Destroying America, and his latest book, which he co-authored with his brother Michael, and which we will be discussing today, which is entitled The Impeachment of Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton for High Crimes in Syria and Libya. I am pleased to welcome back Mr. Jim Ostrowski. Jim, are you ready to roar once again?
Absolutely ready to roar.
Awesome, Jim. And like I mentioned before the interview, we will skip a lot of the formalities here today because, as I said, you've been on the show before, and we will link to that episode, which is number 189, in today's show notes for anyone who missed it. So if you want to learn more about how Jim became a libertarian and get into some of his views on how best to advance liberty, I highly encourage you to go ahead and check that interview out. But we're going to get right into the meat of things here today, Jim. And why don't you start off just by telling listeners out there what prompted you and your brother Michael to get together and write this very concise breakdown of just why you believe Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton committed impeachable crimes with their actions in the countries of Libya and Syria. What inspired this book?
Well, the funny thing is, after the manuscript was completed, I was just sort of doing a Google search to see if other people had been discussing the possibility of impeachment concerning either Libya or Syria. And I did find a post on LouRockwell.com's blog from, I think it was way back in 2012, and it was actually written by me. I'd forgotten I posted it. And it was really about Obama had been making noises about getting involved in Syria. And although obviously the U.S. has intervened in any number of countries, I just thought that the notion of getting involved in Syria was kind of odd because we've never really been involved with that country directly. And it was always sort of in the Russian sphere of influence. And it just sort of made me angry that the arrogance of the interventionist apparently knows no bounds. And I just did a quick post on Lou Rockwell about, you know, if he does this, we should impeach him. But, you know, I didn't do much about it at the time. Like a lot of people, I have a day job. But my brother, Mike, who's was very interested in Middle East issues and would keep me posted over the ensuing years about what was going on with Hillary and Obama and, you know, the Middle East and Syria and Libya. And we just started to discuss it. And I just decided that it would be a good idea if the two of us worked on a book, because nobody was really focused on this issue and what to do about it. That was pretty much the genesis of the book.
So that's interesting. In the course of your research, your initial research for this, you actually came across an article by yourself calling for the possible impeachment if this were to happen. And now, many years later, a lot of this stuff that you were saying, maybe we should look into impeachment if they do this, they actually went ahead and did. So it actually has come quite full circle for you here, I guess.
Yeah. And one of the points I try to make in the book is that we're very limited in what we can do about, you know, misconduct by public officials. And the founding fathers put impeachment in there because they figured there'd be breakdowns in the system and the government wouldn't work according to what we've been told in the civics classes. And I think they really intended impeachment to be used pretty actively to keep these people in line. But over the years, it's been not used very often. There was the Nixon example, and I really disparaged the Clinton impeachment in the book because I was not a supporter of that at the time. And one of the points that we try to make in the book, obviously the odds of these people being impeached is very low, but we're making a larger point that we need to dust off impeachment and use it as a real tool to stop a lot of these foreign interventions and wars, because if not impeachment, there's really no other political solution to these issues.
Sure. And you're not making the case in this book that you think there will be impeachment proceedings or anything like that, but you are laying out the idea that you believe that there should be impeachment proceedings. And you're effectively making the case that a lot of people in Congress should also be making for the impeachment of Barack Obama. Obviously, we can't impeach Hillary Clinton right now because there's no office to impeach her from, but she sure is attempting to get back or get into the highest office in the land. And knowing what she's already done in a lot of these countries, we can surely expect more of the same if she were to be in office. So why don't...
Well, absolutely. Yeah.
And before we get into the specifics of this, I just want to try to paint a little bit of a context here. And obviously, we could spend 6 or 7 or 8 or 20 hours discussing the history of American intervention in the Middle East. But maybe you can just give sort of a quick elevator speech version of American intervention in the Middle East, starting with World War One through the present day conflicts in Syria and Libya. How has the United States, you know, kind of imperial ambition sort of influenced politics in these regions over the last century or so?
Yeah, that's a good question. One of the things that there's a lot of stuff going on in the book, even though it's a very short book. Chapters 1 and 2 really are about the prior history of intervention, and it's all very panoramic, and there's not a lot of fluff in these chapters or really in the book at all. But so basically...
And that's one thing I love about it, by the way. I was able to sit down and read this in an afternoon. So if you're someone who's crunched for time and just wants to get to the meat of things, that's exactly what you guys do in this book. You just give them the meat and nothing else.
Yeah, you got to be aware of the market. And it seems like all the books that I'm working on or have published, and it's a total of 5, people want a short, readable volume. Everybody's busy, and that's what we tried to do here. But with World War One, basically displaced the Ottoman Empire, which had existed for, I don't know, like 500 years. And a lot of that territory over there was up for grabs, and basically the area around Syria, Jordan, and so on, in Iraq, that was grabbed up by the British and the French. And they just sort of grabbed it and said that, you know, this is ours. The whole story about Lawrence of Arabia, you know, leading some of the Arab fighters in the desert. Well, they were all stabbed in the back because they wanted independence, but they didn't get it. So what happens over there is that some, you know, higher ranking military officials, Sykes and Pico, or they might have been diplomats. They just sort of drew some lines on maps and created some countries, and that's how Syria, Iraq, and a lot of these other Jordan, a lot of these other countries were created. Well, these boundary lines don't make any sense. They don't relate to the groups that actually live there. So a lot of people that really don't get along historically were cobbled together in the same groups. So that obviously happened in Iraq. That happened in Syria, and there's a fault line in the Muslim world, the Shiites versus the Sunnis, which is relevant in both countries, because in Iraq, the Shiites were a majority ruled over by a Sunni minority dictator, Saddam, and people, you know, wonder why was this guy so nasty? Well, because that's the only way you could hold the country together, because it's not really a country. It's just an artificial cobbling together, as we've already discussed. So same thing happened in Syria. It's just that in Syria, the minority that runs everything and has been, you know, no saint in terms of suppressing the majority Sunnis, is they're called Alawites. And I understand that they're a branch of Shiites. So this stuff is, you know, you can Google the stuff or look it up on Wikipedia. and figure out that if you upset these regimes over there, it's not going to turn into a New England style town hall democracy. It's going to be a nasty, bloody civil war. And the sort of establishment, the elites are saying, well, yeah, look at Syria. It's a bloody civil war. Well, of course it's a bloody civil war. And, you know, we argue in the book that the U.S. Helped to instigate the whole thing in the first place, although they're sort of pretending that they didn't intervene. There's a lot of sort of Orwellian, like, doublespeak going on here. They did covertly arm the rebels there in Syria. So the whole history of the Middle East is really rooted in the disaster of World War I, creating all these artificial states. And nobody wants to allow self-determination of the people who live there, create sort of nation states, which would be better than what you have over there now. And then in more recently, you know, post-1948, basically, American foreign policy over there has been driven by two factors. One, to do what's good for Israel, and two, to allegedly keep the oil flowing. And that's basically been the root of foreign policy. There's a bit of, you know, let's stop the terrorists. But depending on how you look at the issue of terrorism, the reason why there are terrorists over there, the main reason is, first of all, there's all these brutal regimes over there because they have to be brutal regimes because, again, the states don't make any sense. And people don't want to be part of them, but they have to be. And the U.S. props up and has propped up many of these brutal regimes, for example, Egypt. And so the terrorism problem is really just an outgrowth of the mistake of our being there in the first place. And that's sort of laid out in the book. It's not just all about Syria and Libya. We try to really put the whole thing in context. And these are sort of examples of what happens in the Middle East. Sure. They're important examples because that's what's happening now. But what happened in Iraq was very similar. And that's really part of the mix, obviously, because ISIS is now in Iraq and in Syria. So it's complicated. There's a lot of names and dates and countries. But the bottom line is actually, once you understand the fundamentals, it's actually relatively simple.
Yeah, in a very broad sense, almost all of the conflicts we've seen in the Middle East over the last century can really be traced to that initial drawing of these really arbitrary lines, creating these countries which divided up tribes, paired tribes together that would normally war against each other, and then furthermore by the creation of the State of Israel and the more lines that were drawn through that. So we can really trace all of that back to these imperialist kind of ambitions that have been going on for some time. Now, let's fast forward here to the current conflicts, and as I said, you do use the term crimes, and the word crimes has a very specific meaning. So why don't we just briefly touch on the specific crimes? What are the specific crimes that you believe that Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama should be charged with in relation to their actions in Libya and in Syria?
Well, I think there are crimes, but just it's important to point out that to be impeached, you don't necessarily have to commit a crime. And the term misdemeanors in the Constitution actually refers to sort of a bad deed as opposed to, you know, driving while intoxicated being a misdemeanor under most state laws. I am a criminal defense attorney, so I know a little bit about that stuff. But the main grievance we have is that you got two countries and they're very similar, except that the intervention in Libya was more overt, and the intervention in Syria has been more covert. But basically, you've got two countries, neither of which has attacked the United States, and there has been no declaration of war against these countries. There's no imminent threat that either country will attack the United States. So under the constitutional view that we believe in, and Congressman Ron Paul always espoused this and still does in his current Foreign Policy Institute that he has, that those wars are illegal. Now, interestingly enough, we found some constitutional scholars and quote them in the book and along the same lines as the Ostrowski brothers. One of them is Barack Obama. Another one is Joe Biden.
Couple classic and, libertarians there, huh?
Yeah, and Tim Kaine as well. And by the way, Tim Kaine is a, I believe he's a Harvard lawyer. So all these men are trained constitutional lawyers. And before they got into power, they were, and maybe when there were Republicans running the presidency, they took sort of a libertarian Ron Paul type view of these matters. And so that's the basic indictment. And then we talk a lot in the book. Again, we try to make points that are much broader than the specific context. But there's a lot of deception in the history of American intervention. They're usually making up some sort of a whopper to justify the intervention. And we believe that's been true in both of these incidents. Either allegations have been made up or things have been exaggerated. And we believe that's another, to lie about war, I think, is a very serious offense. So, you know, in the absence of a legal justification for these wars, which we believe there is no justification, you do get into a situation where these acts could be considered crimes because people are being killed and assaulted and property is being destroyed. People are being displaced, and the mass movement of peoples is always tantamount to mass murder, because
sure,
that's what happens.
Within any war like this, within any aggressive war like this, you're going to see many, many, many individual instances of crimes, whether they are murder, whether they are rape, and we certainly see a lot of those cases in the cases of Libya and Syria.
Well, yes, in the case of Libya, the goal, according to the UN resolution, was to protect civilians. But basically what happened is that they went in there and really became part of the team to overthrow the regime. And, you know, a lot of the people, I'm sure there was a few sort of sincere, you know, middle class type Democrats over there. But the bulk of the people were sort of jihadist types, and a lot of atrocities were committed by them. And I, you know, I believe that the American forces and the UN countries kind of looked the other way. So, I mean, in the aftermath, I mean, this is what there's no doubt about at all. I mean, the aftermath of these interventions has been absolutely horrible in both countries. We hear more about Syria, but Libya has like, I don't know, like three governments, and it's just a brutal sort of war of all against all. And that, you know, that's what happens. And again, we try to make the broader point about the ideology of progressivism, which really underlies a lot of our intervention. The fact that the progressive never seems to understand that he doesn't understand what's going to happen and just doesn't know enough. And it's not good enough to say, oh, we didn't really know how this would turn out, because that itself is an indictable offense. How could you go into a country and overthrow the current regime and the way of life, whether we agree with it or not, and not understand that tremendous amount of disruption, chaos, and violence will be unleashed? And so that's not an excuse, you know, that's a confession of guilt.
That is some kind of defense right there. The, how are we to know that coming in and dropping bombs and murdering a dictator in the street would lead to even more violence? It seems like not the best defense in the world.
Yeah, but that's basically, and the other point is that you see, you know, I wrote the book on progressivism, so I'm always trying to explain how this theory applies. Well, sure enough, I mean, Obama said, you know, my mistake in Libya was we didn't go in with enough force. Now, isn't that basically what the progressive always says, domestically or in foreign policy, that we didn't go in with enough force, or in domestic policy, we didn't spend enough money, we didn't hire enough people. So
sure, we didn't have enough regulations. It's always the same idea. We need more of whatever thing we just did that didn't work.
Right. So there's never a recognition that their policy failed. It's always reinterpreted as the policy wasn't tried enough. And of course, the other tactic is to blame scapegoats and so on, which is happening a lot domestically. But so really encourage people to, you know, pick up the book. It's pretty cheap, particularly on Kindle. There's a lot of material in there about progressivism and how it applies to foreign policy, the history of of our intervention over there. And also, you know, some good stuff about Syria and Libya, which is really, you know, we try to make the point in the book that these crises are having ramifications all over the world and currently and in the United States, with terrorist attacks that are arguably tied to those events and the rise of ISIS, which sort of got its start after the Libyan intervention, and the refugee crisis, which has obviously caused upheaval in Europe, and it's beginning to cause upheaval in the United States. There's a huge impact on the presidential election. So this is sort of a big topic, and I think you know, informed people need to be aware of what's going on. And the book sort of is a really short, in all honesty, cheap way to find out what is going on over there.
Jim, we're going to really dig in to some of the specifics of what went on in Libya and Syria in recent years in just a minute. But first, a quick word from today's sponsors.
Hey guys, this is Roger Paxton, and if you're fed up with the government running every single aspect of your life, but you're not listening to the Lava Flow podcast yet, then what's wrong with you? Check us out at thelavaflow.com, or just go back to sucking up to the government. The Lava Flow podcast, striking the root every single episode.
This is Chris Spangle, and I am the host of We Are Libertarians, which you can find in iTunes, Google Play, or at wearelibertarians.com. We are a podcast that brings you all of the irreverence that modern politics deserves by examining current events from a libertarian perspective. So please, check us out at wearelibertarians.com.
Hey everyone, the Johnny Rocket Launchpad is Liberty. Each week we strive to bring you the best guests in talk radio. The Johnny Rocket Launchpad delivers weekly interviews of noteworthy politicians, experts, and activists. The Johnny Rocket Launchpad is bringing the party to the Libertarian Party and launching ideas in your direction. Check us out at johnnyrocketlaunchpad.com. You can hear me, Kurt Nelson, and the beautiful Heather Nixon talk about the ideas of liberty. Rock and roll.
Jim, I want to dig a little bit more into some of the specifics here, specifically regarding Hillary Clinton and her role in these conflicts. Let's start by looking at Libya. Libya is a very interesting case. Yeah, and in 2005, we had George Bush coming in and basically saying, look, Gaddafi is here. He's embraced the West. He's given up his WMDs. He's a great example of how diplomacy can win over war. And just 6 years later, in 2011, the U.S. bombs are dropping and Gaddafi is murdered literally in the street. Now, what was Hillary Clinton's role in pushing this war upon Libya? And how did the facts that were sort of, or maybe non-facts that were being presented by Hillary Clinton to the Obama administration and to the American public, how do those differ from the actual facts of what was going on the ground there in Libya at the time? Because there was some sort of revolution going on during this period.
Well, I think you have to get into the Arab Spring. And I have to confess the entire background of Hillary is not necessarily covered in the book. It's alluded to and really requires more investigation. But what we do know is that there's agencies in the State Department, which obviously she controlled, that their job is to sort of go around the world and foment trouble in regimes that may not be in favor with the U.S. foreign policy elite. And a lot of this goes back to the Arab Spring. And we point out in the book that the funny thing about the Arab Spring is that the U.S. government was on both sides of it. The U.S. government had propped up a lot of the regimes over the Middle East, particularly Egypt. But at the same time, some of these funding mechanisms coming out of the State Department were actually funding groups that were trying to foment, you know, regime change over in Egypt. So as far as the motivations for Hillary, those are not necessarily crystal clear. But one of the motivations that's been put forth is that she was looking for some foreign policy, clear foreign policy victory because she wanted to run for president. So taking out Gaddafi, even though he had sort of reformed himself and installing, you know, a democratic regime in Libya, I think that's what she was trying to accomplish, at least to give her something to run on as a platform when she ran for the inevitable run for the presidency. So I think that, you know, as far as the exaggerations and so on, well, we were told that the rebels were, again, these sort of middle class, you know, democratic reformers, when in fact, many of them were jihadists. And we were told that Gaddafi was, you know, had given orders to slaughter civilians. And in fact, apparently in the sources cited in the book, the evidence that we had from a mole was that Gaddafi had ordered the opposite. And as far as the specific complaint was that there was going to be an attack on Benghazi, and that was going to be a mass slaughter, there was basically very little evidence for that. And because Gaddafi had already taken over a couple of rebel strongholds, and there wasn't any humanitarian disaster. So, and then Gaddafi was actually captured when he was fleeing, and a lot of the UN airstrikes were against the regime's forces that were actually fleeing the battlefield. And that, again, shows that the motivation was not to protect civilians, but to basically overthrow that regime.
Is that very act considered a war crime? Because I remember even in Kuwait when Iraqi troops were fleeing and they were wiped out by American troops on their way out of that country. And I've heard a lot of talk about war crimes in relation to that act. Are you aware of just on the legal level, if an act of murdering, essentially fleeing soldiers or surrendering soldiers, is that considered a war crime on the international level?
Well, I think it is if they're no longer engaging in combat. Now, in the fog of war over there, they'll always construct an argument that, well, you know, they might have been fleeing one battle scene, but they might have coalesced in another area, and we didn't know what they were going to do. But it's certainly on the borderline of war crimes.
How does this all tie into Syria? Because there is more than just the fact that they're located in the generally the same part of the world. There is a direct link between what happened in Libya and the funding of many groups later, which became ISIS, some of which may have been ISIS at the time. So can you kind of make that connection for us between a lot of the weapons in Libya and how many of those weapons ended up in the hands of ISIS in Syria?
Well, there is some research, although it hasn't been, I think, proven conclusively, but I believe Seymour Hersh wrote on this, that there was a lot of weapons laying around Syria after the Civil War. And, you know, Obama-Hillary administration wanted to intervene in Syria, but they wanted to be more covert about it. And the belief is that the consulate that was attacked was actually a staging point for sending weapons into Syria. So that may be what Benghazi was really ultimately about. But the problem is that the Republican committee didn't really want to expose all that, because many of those Republicans favored the overthrow of the Assad regime in Syria. So we kind of haven't gotten to the bottom of that yet, and certainly it needs to be further investigated. But I think the big picture with Syria is that in recent years, we talked about the Sunni Shiite divide. And the interesting thing about that is that in recent years, the U.S. foreign policy establishment has sided with the Sunni regimes, and they include, you know, Saudi Arabia and some fairly nasty customers over there. And there's much more connection between terrorism against the United States and Sunnis and Sunni regimes than there is Shiite regimes. However, again, post-Iraq, Israel has considered Iran to be the biggest enemy over there, and because of the Shiite alliance that's perceived to exist and perhaps may really exist, Syria is considered a way to reduce the influence of Iran and to further isolate Iran. So, and there's actually an email by Sidney Blumenthal, which sort of outlines this, and it's discussed in the book, where the whole intervention into Syria is designed to actually damage Iran and help Israel. So, I mean, the whole thing is like incredibly convoluted, but that's what you have to look at. But what it's not about is any imminent threat to the United States, because there's no evidence that Syria has ever been involved in attacking the United States or sponsoring terrorism. And although you endlessly hear that Iran is the number one state sponsor of terrorism, well, I don't know where that calculation comes from, but they didn't do 9/11, and they didn't do a lot of the other terrorist attacks. They're not involved in ISIS, because ISIS is almost by definition a Sunni group. So it's kind of strange that,
I mean, if ISIS is the number one enemy of the United States, I mean, logically speaking, you'd want to make Iran an ally in that fight, because ISIS is equally an enemy of the Shiites and the Iranian government as they are to the United States.
That's true. But getting into ISIS a little bit, because there's a lot of talk, and you know, our book is really not partisan as far as the presidential candidates, but we do point out that, you know, if you're going to get rid of ISIS, which is probably a good idea, but you have to understand that ISIS really goes back to the whole World War I problem that we talked about. It was inevitable after you create a democracy in Iraq that the Shiites are going to control. They have the most people. They have about 60%, and the Sunnis were left out in the cold. And ISIS really exists in the Sunni areas of Iraq and some of the Sunni areas of Syria. So the question is, if you get rid of ISIS, what new government is going to take their place? And that's a problem that neither Donald Trump nor Hillary nor anybody else that I'm aware of has really addressed. So as much as we may loathe the things that ISIS is doing on a daily basis, both over there and over here and everywhere else in Europe, it's not particularly easy to figure out what comes after ISIS, because there should be some sort of a Sunni a government that's identified by as Sunni over there, but nobody's quite figured out how to put that together so far. And that's a huge problem.
Well, Jim, we can only hope that, I mean, it's very clear that it's either going to be Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump as president. Obviously, we know what Hillary Clinton has done. You lay out a lot of her recent actions in the book, so I do encourage people to check that out. Donald Trump, a bit more of a wild card, but, you know, like you just said, he's mentioned taking out ISIS, but hasn't talked about much of a plan of what's going to replace ISIS in that region or what have you. So either way, it's a little bit of a tenuous situation when it comes to the presidency going forward, but we can only really hope that more people will become informed about these topics, and your book is certainly a big part of that. So I do want to encourage people to please check it out. Share the information in this book with your friends and family, because at the end of the day, our foreign policy, our domestic policy, these things are never going to change unless we can really inform more people about the reality of them. And that really is the first step. So, Jim, I want to commend you on putting out this very concise breakdown of Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama's actions in Libya and Syria. And before I let you go, why don't you just let everybody out there know where they can find the book? Like I said, we will link to it, and where they can find all of your other work and your current writing.
Well, it basically everything, all my books are on Amazon, and they're available in Kindle version. And we are putting out an audio of this book. It's the first audio I've done. And so that should be out shortly, because I know a lot of people love to buy the audio versions.
All right, Jim Ostrowski. And I believe your writing can be found where? At LouRockwell.com?
LouRockwell.com. And give a plug to actually have two weekly newspapers in the Buffalo area that publish, and they're both online, but also widely distributed in paper. It's Art Voice in Buffalo and the Niagara Falls Reporter. And there's not too many libertarian columnists on paper these days. And I've gotten lucky with a new publisher that took over those publications.
Well, Jim, whether it's online or in local newspapers, I appreciate all the work you're doing for Liberty. Keep up the great work, Jim. Keep on roaring.
Yeah, thanks a lot for having me. I really appreciate it.
All right, gang, I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Jim Ostrowski, a guy that is really in there doing the nitty-gritty work in the Liberty Movement, writing books, doing research, and him and his brother Michael have done a tremendous amount of research in a very compact book. So I highly do recommend checking that book out. You can find it in today's show notes at lionsofliberty.com/251. Of course, any purchases you make through our Amazon link benefits the site, helps us keep the lights on, helps us maybe expand what we're doing with our podcast that we're bringing to you each and every week, three times a week here at Lions of Liberty. If you enjoy what we're doing, why don't you head over and make all your purchases through our Amazon link, lionsofliberty.com/Amazon. Costs you nothing extra to do and helps us get a little kickback and keep things going here. Another great way you can help us is by leaving us a 5-star rating and a great review over on iTunes, especially iTunes, even if you don't use iTunes to listen. It is a tremendous help if you can leave us reviews and ratings on that service or wherever else you listen for that matter, whether it's Stitcher, whether it's TuneIn, whether it's Google Play, whether it's YouTube. I don't even know if you can leave us reviews in all those places, but anything you can do to help get the word out there, including sharing it with your friends, sharing it with your family. If you got some Hillary people on your friends list, well, maybe share this interview with them. Now, this is not to say that Donald Trump will be any better. I have no idea. You know, one day Donald Trump sounds a lot better on foreign policy. Sounds great. Talks about speaking to our other leaders, using diplomacy. The next thing, you see him aligning himself with Rudy Giuliani, John Bolton, and some of the worst neocons around. So it's really hard to say what you're going to get from Donald Trump. But I know what you're going to get from Hillary Clinton. You're going to get a woman who callously says things like, ha, 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 we came, we saw, he died. I mean, that is just a callous, psychopathic human being. This person has proven over her years of service. As a senator, she was for the Iraq War. As a secretary of state, she helped instigate coups in Libya and in Syria. It is all laid out in Jim Ostrowski's book. Highly recommend checking it out. This coming Friday, I highly recommend checking out Felony Friday, hosted by John Odermatt, our weekly look at the broken criminal justice system. Now, next week, this coming Sunday, actually, there is a presidential debate, number two, between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. So we are planning to give that some coverage. If you are not already a member of our Facebook group, the Lions of Liberty Forum, that is our private group that any of you can join as long as you appear to be a real person and like someone that should be in a Liberty Forum, we will get in there and approve your membership. So just look up Lions of Liberty Forum, type that in your little search bar on Facebook. Again, we will also link to that group in the show notes page for this program at lionsofliberty.com/251. If you join this group, we always have great conversations live during these debates. So you can comment on the debate, talk to myself, talk to some other contributors to the site. Some past guests are there in the forum. A lot of action going on there. So please do yourself a favor and become a part of this conversation by joining the Lions of Liberty Forum on Facebook. You can also follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Lions of Liberty. If you prefer tweeting, find us on Twitter and tweet to us at Lions of Liberty. And you can always drop me an email with your feedback. That's Mark, M-A-R-C, at lionsofliberty.com. But my point being, there is another presidential debate this coming Sunday. We will cover it. We're going to try to get you out a reaction podcast on Monday. Worst case, it'll be next Wednesday's show. But the plan is to get it for you on Monday, hot off the presses. So either way, hit that subscribe button to make sure you don't miss anything. Until next time, guys, live long and live free.